UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
Bluegrass Karting and Events now has the fastest go-karts in Kentucky and axe throwing. Grab your coworkers, family, and friends and make a night of it with our new full bar and food menu. Bluegrass Karting and Events is Louisville's premier high-speed entertainment destination, online at bluegrasskarting.com.
Good afternoon. I'm Nick Valvano. This Sports Center update brought to you by Window World. Visit them online at windowworld.com. AP College Football Week 0 rankings coming out. UK, they might be 31st in the coaches poll, but they're not in the AP top 25, nor did they receive any votes. That's a little surprising to Matt Fortuna of The Athletic. He joined Lachlan McClain on the Midday Rush earlier today.
They had a really, really, really good season, and Mark Stoops has proven to be a really, really, really good coach there, who, unlike in most places, was given the benefit of time to slowly build that place up and have the kind of breakthrough campaign that he did last season. So I'm a little surprised that people have written them off that quickly.
You can catch that full interview on the Podcast Center at ESPNLouisville.com, iTunes, and on SoundCloud. Details emerging in the Rexha Karma dismissal by U of L. An open records request obtained by our own Drew Diener indicated in a six-month investigation examples of discriminatory jokes by the coach and players playing in 40-degree weather. Karma, the longest-tenured U of L athletic coach, is tennis coach for 29 years. Wrapping up on the diamond, the Reds. Yesterday, they lost 3-2. They're in action with the Padres again tonight, 7:10 p.m., 6:40 coverage begins here on ESPN 680, 105.7. It'll be Sonny Gray on the bump for the Redlegs. The Bats last night lost 5-4 at Columbus. Tonight, they're in Columbus again, 6:35, first pitch. Bobby V has the V Show coming up next right here on ESPN 680, 105.7. This is SportsCenter.
It's Andy Sweeney, and you're listening to ESPN 680 and 105.7.
You're listening to The V Show with Bob Valvano on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
Almost. He's walking in, sitting down, and there he is.
Come on. Hi. I like to stand in the hall and wait until the guy says whatever he says, and then he says, Bob Valvano, and then come running down the hall like I'm a contestant on Price is Right. That's what I want. That's what I like to do. That would be great. Who's the most famous person you've ever seen before they were famous on a game show? I saw once on a game called The Anniversary Game, of all things, in New York. This is way back. Marv Albert played with, obviously, his then first wife. And I guess then they could play the divorce game. Hey, how you doing? But I saw that. And there have been other famous – there's websites that show you the famous – before they were famous playing on game shows, the dating game and – other ones, so that was Marv on the anniversary day.
I really was.
So I'm in my own fantasy little Price is Right game. Show us what's up for bid, Nick. What do we have?
A brand new car.
Whoa!
Wait. It's a Hot Wheels car, but still.
Hot Wheels car. Let's see. This Hot Wheels car is a scaled-down model of a Ford Mustang. Red, doors actively work, made by the Matchbox Company, Chicago, Illinois.
Stainless steel.
First guy is a complete jackass. He says $22. He's an idiot. Next guy says $399. Well, third person says $398. The first guy wants to strangle him. And then, the other way around, he says $4. That's it. Because he would mean the $399 guy can't win because you got to get close out going over. And then I realize they all bid too high. And I say 1 cent. That's so clever. The actual retail price is. It is about, what is a Matchbox car? About a buck?
It's about $1, yeah.
It's $1. Come on, yay! You get to play the special game in the front.
Oh, $1,
I love the special games in the front. So, all right, so I just envisioned that. Actually, my true calling was as a game show.
Yeah, no, 1,000%.
I mean, that's absolutely.
All given, you need given, is this skinny little mic.
And I had to lose some weight. I had to get my teeth bleached. They all have glaringly white smiles. They weigh nothing, and they say nothing, which is kind of how I do it.
You still have hair, though. Some of the guys just have
toupees. No. Oh yeah. Toupees. Yes, but I was going to say there's very few. I can't even name a
Howie
bald.
Boom.
I can't. Well, he's by choice, so he's the chic. I shave my head, guy. But there's not very many bald game show hosts. I'm a game show. There's a website that has every game show that was ever produced on television, who the host was, and it's a shame they just don't do them anymore. When I was a kid, I've talked about this, and let's be nostalgic for a moment. That was the only thing about being sick that was awesome.
Get up.
Game shows started right after the morning shows, you know, the Today Show, whatever. So at 9 a.m., and they were all half hour. So you had a game show from 9 to 9:30, 9:30 to 10, 10 to 10:30, 10:30 to 11, 11 to 11:30, 11:30 to 12, 12 to 12:30, 12:30 to 1, and then, nothing but soap operas starting at 1. And then you had to hang on until about 5 when the independent stations would start playing cartoons or Three Stooges.
That's
so
when I would go back to
4 hours of just abject agony.
Typically at that point, hopefully my fever broke and I would go back to sleep.
It's not a Hot Wheels. It's a Matchbox car. Oh, mine was a Matchbox cars. Well, they are more expensive than Hot Wheels.
They're the stainless steel. Yeah.
I still think my one penny bid would get it done, though. So... thanks for being with us. I really want
to open the show that way. I want you to be just walking down the sidewalk, and I want to play that. This is why we need video. And it's like Bob,
oh, come on down.
And you just get all excited. You have the giant sticker on your chest.
That would be awesome. Then run in. The problem is I know I'm going to be called. You have to make it so like someday they just don't call me. I don't get paid. They have somebody else. You know, they announce, Andrew Chernoff, come on down. And Andrew, where the hell is he? He comes hopping out of the bathroom. Yeah, I'm here. What's up? Yeah, you're on for 3 hours. What about me?
Word?
They didn't call your name.
That's how we should get people to fill in this year.
They should stand out on the sidewalk.
When you're out and about, like, we get that frantic text at like 5 in the morning. It snowed. The plane fell apart. Can't make the show. Find somebody. I'll just be like, Biscuit, come on now.
Yeah, I like that. Or better yet, I go, you won better. Why just do that way? Make it like a let's make a deal. Have them all dress up like they've lost their minds. Like, let's get, I like this guy. You, dressed up like the giant tomato, and that guy who, what are you? I'm a big polyp. Great, come on down. Yeah, you guys are going to co-host the show. What are your names? I'm Victor. Come on, Victor.
And Terry Talk Sports.
Tommy and Terry Talk Sports. All the whole show we're talking sports. Let's get into backup tackles for UofL. Let's go to the phones. Who's going to be the big backup tackle? Well, that's an easy one for Louisville. They don't have backup tackles. They barely have enough starting tackles. They got like 3 guys on scholarship for the offensive line. So, there's that. So there you go. Guy says, Mets season starts tonight. Next 6 games crucial. Not only next 6, next 9. They play all 9 teams again. Are going to be in the playoffs. They're at home. If they got to go like 6-3, 5-4 at worst, 6-3 would be awesome. I think they're 2 games out. I'll have to check. And quick, that guy who hates baseball and hates the Mets, text, drive over here. Press your nose against the window. The world's going to end as we know it. Because that's the thing I have to say, I'm going to...
Come on down.
Come on down. Tell us we're a jackass. Here's the thing. And listen, in the interest of full disclosure, it's a big disclaimer. It would be more powerful if I didn't do the disclaimer. But then you run the risk of sounding like, you know, a jackass even more than you are. And I don't like to do that. I'm sensitive to that. So I'm just telling you that I'm giving this as a disclaimer. I've only met Rexy Karma maybe 5 times. Every time I've talked to him, nice guy, very pleasant, enjoyed speaking with him. Okay, so when I say this, I'm not saying it out of insensitivity. This has been actually a very difficult bit of programming to put together in my head, and I'll tell you why in a minute. Because, I'll tell you the first part, and then I'll get to the second part, which is the part that's going to anger people. I went through a very eerily similar situation at Catholic U, which I've talked about, and it's not making it all about me. It's just that if you're going to talk about a topic, you like to talk about something you know about, and I know a little something about this, and I'll talk about that in just a bit, and not so much for about myself, but how it relates to what the situation is with Rex. But here's the part that's going to piss some folks off, but I'm going to say it anyway. You know, I get ridiculed if we talked about the Mets and the world and the pennant race and baseball and again. I understand if you don't like baseball, but let's just be candid, shall we? There have been people, and I understand that Drew loves tennis, and he knows Rex way better than I do. I think Rex taught him when he was a kid, if I'm not mistaken. That's how long Rex has been at it. So I'm not making it, again, being a callous to his own particular situation or suggesting that there are not interesting things to talk about, because there are. But the fact of the matter is this. There were probably literally hundreds or maybe thousands of people for whom this has been an enormous talking point today with a great emotional charge to it that don't have an interest in it. Like, I mean, if you're one of the other Louisville coaches and knew him or whatever, that's a different story. If you're a friend, if you played for him, I know Drew got a whole crap ton of calls from guys who played for him. Sure, it's a tremendously emotional thing. But 95% of the people for whom this has been a major talking point, text line, they couldn't name a guy who played tennis at Louisville in Rex's entire tenure here if they were held at gunpoint by a terrorist and it meant saving their life. And that's the truth. That's just the reality. I mean, it's not a knock. It's tennis. People don't talk about college tennis. I would venture to say there isn't a sports station in the country in a college town where that's ever a topic of conversation. I can't imagine. Maybe if they went and were playing for the national championship, they might mention it or something. But honestly, it's not. But now all of a sudden, it's, oh, these people are all experts on what's going on in the tennis program. Well, I know the report. What I'm saying to you is all these people just have seemingly gone crazy over this when it is a topic that they've had no interest in forever. And in big picture of things, I'm sorry. It's far less, even to the general sports fan, significant than figuring out who's going to win the wild card and be in the Major League playoffs. I'm just telling the truth. You don't have to like it, but that's the truth. So that's the only part about this that people are just like, oh, my God, did you see what they did to Rex? Okay, quick, he's a pistol. Name one of the players who played for him or go meet, your day of reckoning is here. I can't do it. Pull the trigger, Sally. I mean, that's just the reality. Now, having said that, I'm one of the people that did react to it but there are some differences. I'm going to tell you my situation briefly. It's not about me. And then tell you how it relates to Rex's situation and what I think you can take away from it. And some things we could say with some degree of certainty and then other things that we don't know. Here's the things that I went through. I was hired by an athletic director who left. The new guy who came in, we could not stand each other. Absolutely hated each other. And he was just an interim. And he wasn't going to be there in the long big picture anyway. But he was just a very unpleasant guy for me. And I guess he perceived that for me. I was that way for him. I don't know. I didn't think much about him one way or another. But obviously I rubbed him the wrong way. And he went out of his way to let me know that he was not a big fan. And so I had one kid who transferred in from a Division I school that thought he was a lot better than he was. His father was rich and thought that entitled him to, getting some benefits. And the kid was like the eighth man in our rotation, ninth man. We had a good team. We were 20-5. It was a good team. A good Division III team at 20-5, you get a kid who transfers from Lafayette, he's not going to come in and dominate the program. Lafayette's a low-level Division I. So he didn't play that much. His father lost his mind. So he went to the president, and he, without me knowing, the president loved, not the president, the AD loved it, never told me anything because this was his chance. And he put together a petition, is that the word, of incidents that none of which really were were, you know, a pattern necessarily, but taken out of context, that was bad. And there was a couple things that in hindsight I really wish I hadn't done. I mean, you know, some of them were like 3 and 4 years old, literally. That's no exaggeration. But he was trying to find anything he could to put it together. And when you put it together, it was enough to where, you know, you go to people at Division III, they're not, you know, even in basketball, they're winning at all costs. And they went to a priest who was there, and he was mortified by my behavior, ostensibly. Well, this was, I don't even get into his own behavior. But anyway, the fact of the matter is, so they said, you know, step aside. And the fact is, I had two law professors from the school who represented me against their own institution. They were the law professors in the law school at Catholic. They represented me pro bono against their own school. That took some cojones. They're dear friends to this day for that reason. And then there were 2,700 signatures that they got from the general student body asking that I be reinstated. So my point is, okay, that's that. And then what happened is we reached a settlement. They gave me my full salary for the next year. I was allowed to resign, and I was up getting another job, actually in the same league. But it was still very painful. But my point is, here's the similarities, with one notable exception, and I think this is very important, and this is where I'll start. And it's not a matter of defending Vince or anything like that. It's a matter of reading the tea leaves. If you're looking at this as some sort of a purge or something of Jurich's guys, there's a couple of things that are wrong with that. First of all, and I thank Drew for reminding me of this because I'd forgotten, Rex wasn't even hired by Jurich. He was hired by Bill Olson. What do you think? Tom's trying to bounce Bill Olson's guys? I mean, Vince is trying to bounce Bill Olson's guys? No, so that's no purge. There's no gigantic secret behind-the-scenes agenda. That wasn't the case at all. If any of you want to look at any agenda, it's the fact that they have made a massive commitment to saying we're transparent. And the transparency of this is a very bad optic. And so they either could have somebody say, well, if they were just going to fire the guy, why'd they go through this? All they had to do is say, well, we're moving in a different direction. But I think they were, I hate to say it, smart enough to know if you got a guy who's under contract to 2023, and then you just say we're going another direction and we're going to pay him all the way to the end, that somebody's going to ask why. And so you get into cover-ups and a bunch of disingenuous stuff. And so they basically said, we're going to tell what happened. And they did this. And plus, if you feel like you're doing your job as an institution, if students come to you with concerns about how they're being treated, you owe them an investigation if you think there's some credibility there. So, I mean, that's my explanation of that. So that's the one part that I think is different, is that this is not a Vince Tyree agenda of some sort. That's just ridiculous. You don't waste your breath talking about that. That's preposterous. But what is the same is you get a disgruntled players. And if disgruntled players decide they're going to say something, and this kid, you know, he was not the only one. He was the one that really drove it. His father had the resources. I mean, he was pursuing this as the wealthy will do, with bulldog tenacity and the resources to back it up. Billy Martin, the baseball manager, used to say every baseball team is comprised of 24 guys, 8 who love you, 8 who hate you, and 8 who are on the fence. And the key to success for your team is keeping the 8 guys who are on the fence away from the 8 guys who hate you. So this kid was the most outspoken because he was very outspoken when he came to our program that he was going to be the star. His father was telling his friends, oh, he's transferred home now, he's going to be the star. And he wasn't even starting. So he was the one that was driving the bus. But could they find a couple of guys who were unhappy about not getting playing time? Sure, I'm sure he got one or two other guys who were, you know, not particularly pleased. But by and large, I was very, very grateful that the players stepped up and spoke on my behalf. The other thing is I had an assistant coach who I inherited, and I know in the back of his mind would have wanted the job badly, and I think he did. He undermined me also. In fact, I know he did because he told me he did when it was all over. We met. To their credit, they didn't hire him, even as an interim. They just went in a completely different direction. They fired him too, and we had lunch, and he was crying. I'm sorry I did that. And I was, you know, okay, I hear your apology, but that is part of it as well. And I don't know if anybody on the staff was also part of this. My point is, though, the scenario is eerily similar. You get some people who are unhappy and or have an agenda, and they can, if they can get an audience, they feel they have a chance to make a difference. And this group, for whatever reason, it sounded like it was more than one guy, decided we don't want to play for this guy anymore. And so they went and they had
enough credibility that their stuff was investigated, and the school, I think, was put in a very hard place, which was to say, you know, these things are not fireable in and of themselves, and the fact they're paying him for the rest of his contract lets you know that they didn't really, it was not something, hey, we caught you red-handed, it's the smoking gun. It wasn't the case at all. So they just did what they, you know, did was be transparent and say, look, this is not the image we want, and they were basically staring at players who said they weren't going to play. It takes a certain kind of cojones, again, to use that term, to stand up to a whole team and say, look, too bad, this is our guy and we're standing behind him. And there are a lot of people who say they should have done that, and that's a source of debate. But the fact of the matter is, I'm just explaining to you how these things evolve and how they happen. And I understand it, and I feel for him. Whether you think he should be terminated or not, I feel it's a very difficult thing to go through when you got players who have an agenda, and their agenda is to try and put you in the worst possible light. Think about that. Think about where you work today. If somebody just had an agenda and the resources to do it, simply to put you in the worst possible light, whatever it may be, someday you were late, someday you lost a big report, someday you blew a sale, something, I don't know. It's not all that hard to do. And the fact of the matter, and here's the part that's for me is the largest amount of meat on the bone, because if you read what transpired, if you want to think that, yeah, he should have to go, you know, whatever, you can certainly hang your hat on this incident or that incident or whatever. If you say this is ridiculous, he coached there for a million years and he's got all these players who called Drew, I guess, one after the other today to say, listen, this is, you know, he's our guy. I never felt mistreated by him at all. All of those things. You can certainly find credibility in that. So that's my point. You know, I'm not here to persuade you one way or another. I never played for him. I don't know him well enough, but I can relate to the situation and say I feel for him being investigated with a situation where, you know, nobody's telling you what that you're being investigated over, and ultimately with people who don't want to just get to the truth. The players that started this were trying to get you replaced. That was the bottom line. They were not trying how can we help him? Maybe if he could hear us a little better, we could, you know, we could run the program in a way that we'd all be a little bit more comfortable. They were mad. They wanted him. They wanted heads on a platter. So that's ugly. The part that to me, as I said, is the most meat on the bone is this, and this is the part that you'll never get a consensus on. You won't. And that is, what the hell do we actually expect of our coaches? Because I will tell you this, of all the things I saw in there, and I didn't read the whole report, I confess, but I read the synopsis of it, and I read the allegations, the one thing that I understand the most concern about, and it's something I questioned myself about when I coached, because I thought maybe, you know, I wasn't. Rick Pitino told me once, I said to him, how do you manage to get this out of players that seemingly, you know, are beyond what most other quote-unquote experts thought they'd be able to do? And he said, well, that's because we're really not afraid to ask more from them. I thought about that. And so you got to be willing to ask people to do more than they comfortably would do on their own. That's what part of coaching is. If you do it well, it's asking people, demanding, if you want to say that, to do things more than they would do on their own. Having said that, there's a line that you can't pass, and that's where it gets dicey. And that line is twofold confusing. One, it's open to interpretation. So if you work for one person and another person comes in, that person's definition of where the line is could be a lot different. We can all agree there are some things that everybody would agree, you know, you can't do. You can't hit a kid. I'm being exaggerating to make a point. It's not like everything is subjective. You can't, you know, hit a kid. You can't put a kid in harm's way. Okay, but the other stuff about what you're actually asking them to do, especially playing through injury and stuff like that, So what I did is, and I wondered about that, maybe I shouldn't have, but in hindsight, I think not only should I have, maybe I was ahead of my time, because that seems to be the way you have to do it now. I told the trainer the first day of practice, you tell me if they can play or not. And if you don't know, call the doctor and put your minds together and tell me, do not ask my opinion. I'm not qualified. I can show you the UCLA high post offense or Hank Ibis shuffle cut or the flex, but I don't know if a guy's got a strain or a sprain or a hairline fracture, whatever it means, whether he should play or not. That's your job. You tell me. And whatever you tell me, I would hear to. I won't try and persuade you one way or another. And if the athletes felt he wasn't doing that, again, maybe to some degree that's a line, because I was at a college coach when I was playing soccer. I really thought I badly sprained my ankle during the week, and I was the starting goalkeeper. It was a big conference game on the road, and I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to play. He said, you'll be able to play. He said, we'll tape that up. You'll be fine. And he was right. We did tape it up. But I mean, best of my knowledge, he didn't consult the trainer. But I think if I'd really said, Coach, you're wrong, man. I can't even walk. He was like, all right, well, let's try it. And we did. I taped it really tightly, and I actually had a good game, and I'm always grateful he did that. So that's the point I'm making, is you've got to have a definitive policy in place, one that the school's comfortable with and the coach is comfortable with and everybody's comfortable with, and the players have to understand it. And for me, it starts and stops with the training staff and the doctor. So if that really went on, then I do think that's the most troubling. The other stuff, I got to be candid with you. There are some things that sound so, if I may offend some of our listeners here, so millennial-ish. Oh, my. He made us practice in the cold. Oh, my God. You got to be kidding me. I was in middle school at baseball practice in the mid-30s with wooden bats. Trust me. You can go play tennis in the cold. We used to shovel. And don't tell me, though, your old man walking uphill to school. I'm just telling the truth. Nobody was put in harm's way. We went and shoveled the outdoor court to play basketball because we wanted to play. So I'm sorry about that. That's ridiculous. And the guy who couldn't get the gluten-free meal on the way home, what is he running, a Bob Evans? He's a tennis coach. The hell is that? I mean, seriously, Coach, these eggs are overcooked. I mean, he should be fired. I mean, what are you, nuts? That's just ridiculous. The stuff that's the gray area, though, is if you've never played or never coached. And I hate to do that. I try very hard never to do that on this show, because to me, it implies that, oh, I know something other hosts can't know. No, you're entitled to everybody's meaningful opinion. But when I hear stuff about things that people haven't experienced, I wonder. I'm not specifically alluding to any of the hosts here. I'm just saying in general. Have you ever been in locker rooms? I mean, when I was little, I'll use myself as an example because it doesn't faze me. It didn't faze me then. It doesn't faze me now. Athletes and coaches, athletes especially, with each other, are known to do two things, three things, really. First is always make disparaging remarks about your genealogy. Always. That goes without saying. They called Italian guys ravioli wrestlers, spaghetti benders, guineas. Why? Come here, guinea. Come over here. That's what they called you. That's, you're looking to say that? Sure you can. That was, and I always say WAP. That was another term they used. Do you know where WAP came from? It was Italian immigrants that came through.
Without papers.
Without passport. Without papers.
Oh, without passport.
Either one. So my point is,
don't forget Dago.
Yeah, I'm using it myself so that hopefully nobody will be offended. And if you're Italian, I don't think you'd be offended because you know you went through that. Most of us didn't care. If the other guy was of another ethnic group, you said it back to him. Hey, if he was an Irish guy, hey, Mick, come over here, whatever it may be. But nobody, these were my friends. I love these guys. They loved me. I knew that. This was silly locker room talk. So that always went on. Now, if you say nowadays you can't do it anymore, okay, well, maybe that's something you got to talk about. But my point is, I've seen it firsthand where that is not remotely harmful. It's not, nobody's accused me of something disparaging. Nobody thought I was a criminal. Nobody thought I was in the mafia. It was just an illusion. It was guys joking with each other. Because to me, actually, if you think about it, if all you're doing is talking about an ethnic heritage, there's no harm in that at all. If you're doing it as a stereotype, well, you must be lazy because you're blank, or you must be a pig because you're blank. All right, but again, that's why it's a fine line, but I think sometimes we're a little too sensitive to that one man's opinion. The other thing is, and this is absolutely the truth, they will always make fun of your appearance. There was a guy who pitched in the major leagues named Don Mossy. I think his nickname was Taxi because his ears stuck out so far. They said when he came down the street, he looked like a cab with its doors open. That's mean, but that's what you did. That's how guys were. There was I can't even say, you know where I'm going to go. You can say this because it's not really a sign. Yeah, Foch. There was a guy in my friend's neighborhood. They all loved this guy. But unfortunately for him, he had some sort of a birthmark on his face. And they called him Foch de Caca, which is face of spit, changed the SP. That was it. So they called him Foch for short. Hey, Foch, you want to go out and go to the movies? That's how athletes are. And if... I hate to say it, but if you can't exist in that culture, then it's tougher for you. But my brother, I told you that story. Remember Fat Joya? They loved Fat Gioia. Anthony Gioia. He lived right up the street from him. They'd go knock on the door, even to his own mother. They'd say, "Hi, Mrs. Gioia, is Fat at home?" And he'd say, "Yeah, Anthony." And he'd come out. Yeah, and they loved Anthony. Loved to play with him. But, I mean, should we be more sensitive to that? Maybe. Maybe we need to do better. But that kid knew he was loved by his friends. They loved him. Sometimes I think it goes the other way. It's one of those things that you're more self-conscious about. It goes, oh, nobody wants to mention that his ears are a little bigger. They loved it. Don Mossy was a terrific pitcher. He was a great teammate. They loved him. Fat Gioia, they loved him. Foch was tremendous. He was one of the guys. So you got to draw the line. And I went through that. One of the things they put in the report was a joke I told, which frankly was pretty damn funny. But it was, it had a swear word in it. And if you take it out of context, you could be like, why is he telling that joke to college? I mean, come on. But again, if you take it out of context, so that's the area that's always tough. And here's the third thing. Athletes will always mock you for a mistake. Absolutely. That is the first thing you do. If a guy stumbles on the ice for a hockey player or a ground ball goes right through his legs, they are going to be merciless when you get back to the dugout or
watch
back
out
to
for the
bench.
Blue line, dumbass. Yeah,
that's what I mean. So that's the culture that it is. I mean, that's kind of the way it works. And again, if you can't take it, then it's hard to play. But if it's something that's way over the line, if you're demeaning a guy, sobbing. I mean, Donnie Moore, what a tragic story that is. This wasn't his teammates. He gave up the home run to keep the California Angels out of the World Series in the American League playoffs to Dave Henderson. Donnie Moore was so depressed over that. Now, you could argue he must have had some tendencies of manic depression or some sort of depression anyway, but most people know him, said that just devastated him. He actually took his own life. Sports should never do that. So, again, just from my discussion there, you can see it's a very fluid line. It's not concrete. It's not a particularly hard and fast thing. Hitting a player, hard and fast thing. Telling a kid that you don't give a damn if he graduates or gets great, that's a wrong. Nobody in their right mind. But some of this other stuff is difficult. And you can, if you find somebody who just doesn't like you and gets an ear to listen, they can find a place to hang it, get a foothold, and make it difficult for you. That's the reality. I mean, I'll give you a great example. If Mike Pratt were here, we could talk about this. His friend, Don DeVoe, is really one of the quality guys in basketball. He's a guy of great integrity, best of my knowledge, never involved in any recruiting scandals, very good strategist, well-respected by his peers. He was at Tennessee. Tennessee built that gigantic new building, and they fired him. He won, and they fired him. And behind, really, what it came down to, in large measure, was he was not a guy who glad-handed boosters very well. It's not his personality. And they said, "We got 20,000 seats to sell, dude. You got to be out there and be a little bit of a fuller brush salesman." And they had to make a change. And that's what I've said. If you're a coach and you win, and your players graduate, but your style isn't entertaining enough. And then out you go. If you win, entertaining style, but the players aren't doing a good job academically, out you go. If you win, players graduate, entertaining style, but one of them goes and robs a bank, you're accountable. Out you go. If you don't win enough, even though your kids are graduating, they love you, they're trying hard, you're plowing all the rules, out you go. I believe it's by design. I believe it's by design to make it so that basically coaches are not hamstrung to the athletic directors are not hamstrung to the coaches they hire, because you can always find a justification, always, always find a justification to make a change. I mean, unless you find a guy who's undefeated, they've sold every ticket in the building, they had the best fundraising year they've ever had, every kid graduates with a 4-0, there's a perfect balance of black players and white players, the players after every game sing Kumbaya, they love God, country, and school. Come on, these are human beings. There's a business, wherever you're listening, your business doesn't work like that, trust me. Not because I'm taking a shot at your business without knowing who it is, because that's how human beings are flawed. But the problem with coaches has been twofold. One, they have been allowed sometimes to get, and administrators, I would argue, to ever turn a blind eye. It's kind of like the temperamental artist. Well, that's how he is. That's what it takes to win. No, it doesn't. Somebody's got to have the guts to tell Elvis, you can't shoot out televisions in your underwear in hotel rooms. That's not normal behavior. You can't do that. And they're reluctant to do that. the administrators and the people above the administrators to tell the administrators themselves. So I think that's part of the culture. And the other thing is, you know, you've got a situation where the landscape changes. The athletic landscape changes. And you can this is good. A guy texted this to me, and it's a good point, and I'm actually going to make it. You can say, well, the two arguments I don't like, the back in the 80s we used to, has no bearing on today. That's actually making my second point for me, which is you can see that the worst thing about college sports today is that it's gotten so corporate. The best things about college sports today is that it's gotten so corporate. And what do I mean by that? I mean that the coaches are expected to be professional of the ilk like they are at the NBA level. The NBA guys, you don't see a lot of, there's not a lot of guys histrionics screaming and you know, showing their players up in front of 20,000 people. You won't last very long. You can be displeased with something they do, and you can you know, run a tighter ship than some others, but you cannot visibly show your displeasure. That is part of the deal. And that is, you're right, that's a very, very big difference from the 80s and even before that. My brother played high school football for a guy who became a dear friend of the family. He's a great man. I love the guy to pieces. His name is Harry Curtis. He was an ex-Marine. He has a heart of gold. But when he was a football coach, he was, you know, taking on the role of the football coach. He was also the baseball coach. Completely different persona in baseball. Football coach, he would come out, and if he didn't like what you did, he would take his open palm and smack you in the top of the helmet. Bink! You know, and you can't do that today. Even though it's a football helmet designed to take contact, you can't do that. I understand. I get it. And so the coach of today is the Brad Stevens of the world. The guy who's always buttoned down, and his respect emanates from his preparation, and you know, the players respect him for that. And they do. They say when they call a timeout, they always feel like they're going to get a basket because he does a great job of running sets out of timeouts. So that's how you win their respect. You can't motivate them through fear completely anymore. Although, I have to tell you, I heard Locke talking about this, and I said this to him. This is not like trying to do the you know, let me tell secrets out of school. It's not that at all. It's just the reality. He was talking about guys like Dabo Sweeney and Tony Bennett, and they don't motivate through fear. Well, they don't motivate through the kind of fear we saw other coaches do, which is absolutely throw hissy fits. You know, I don't want to mention names, but we've seen a bunch of them that are like that, that their emotion comes through. Everybody in the building knows that they're displeased with what you did there. And so they, that's how they, you know, people will behave just to avoid incurring the wrath of Khan there. And that's part of their strategy. Their strategy, Rick told me once, I want to make it so unpleasant after we lose a game that their thought is, I never want to lose again because I don't want to go through that. Okay, I get some of that. But the fact of the matter is, you can still be a disciplinarian without making it so that they are so obviously acting out of a fear of this maniacal behavior. And Tony's a good example of that. If you practice and play for Tony Bennett, trust me, there are two things you do not want to do. You do not want to turn the ball over, and you do not want to be out of position on the defense, the pack line defense. That is not something he's just going to, okay, you need to do a little better on that, Nick. Gosh, that's, no. Trust me, he's not going to throw his hands up and embarrass you in front of the whole arena, but there's an accountability there, and if you want to even call it a fear, you're going to do it that way they need you to do it, or you're not going to be able to play in our system. So there is a certain amount of that part of it. But the there's no question that texter's right. It's not the 40s or 50s or whatever. No, people keep telling me that. It's not the 40s or 50s or say trying to equate what went on 30, 50 years ago is irrelevant. You're not listening to what I'm saying. I'm telling you that the form of those things is radically different. I understand that. But the principles that are involved are identical. If you have displeased players and an administration that is you know, or people who are out to make you look your worst, there's very few people listening to me that would look pretty good if their whole mission from a group of people with whom they work was just simply to take the worst days of their working lives and put them all together in a report. That hasn't changed. Now, what things would be in that report are absolutely different than they were 40 years ago, 50 years ago, no question. But some of those things, while taking different forms, are still at the core of the discussion. And for me, some of those things are a little silly. Making players practice outside in 30 degrees, that's got nothing to do with the 80s or 70s or 60s. That's not asking something unreasonable. That's not, you're not putting them in harm's way. It's uncomfortable. There's nothing, I'm sorry about that. That's ridiculous. That's what you got to get your work in. That's what you do. I mean, so I'm sorry. That is so millennialish. You can get mad at me as you want to, but you're not, you know, I just wonder if anybody's hearing me. Somebody said, I wonder who Tyran Cupley would fire next. Didn't hear a word I said, evidently. It has nothing to do with all of that. Nothing. This man was not hired by Jurich. He was hired by Bill Olson. Vince has got an agenda against Bill Olson hirees? I mean, that's just so ridiculously illogical. That's not worthy of our attention. What is, to me, the most meaningful discussion is, where is this area in the middle? You know, we agree that emphasizing academics and trying hard and putting team first, good. Punching players in the face if they play badly, telling them academics don't matter, bad. There's some things we can say have been are universal truths. The things between those two lines, that scale has changed and is changing and will change. And I don't know if, while the things on that scale are different, athletics has done the kind of job it should do to make sure it lets everybody who's involved know exactly where that line is. And I contend, cynically, sometimes that's by design. Because if I don't tell you exactly what it is I'm demanding of you, no matter what you do, I can find some reason to find fault with it and make a change. And that, to me, hasn't changed, no matter if it's 1960, 1980, 2010, 2019, whatever. What are we doing? Oh, roundtable. Okay, well, let's bring him in. I didn't realize we had them. I didn't know we had a cast. Let's get him in now. Roundtable's coming up next. ESPN 680 1057.
You're listening to the V Show podcast. Listen to Bob Valvano weekdays noon to 3 only on ESPN 680 and online at ESPNLouisville.com.
Noble Knights of the Round Table.
What the hell is that? And now Nick has found footage from the very first television program in history in 1933.
This is going to be very, very
time now for the roundtable on The V Show, presented by the Sports and Social Club.
Lachlan McLean.
Now, Wes, what does today have in common with a boy band?
Where are we going?
They're both 98 degrees.
I should have known. I don't know my boy bands as good as you do. Sorry.
Well, we were in sync on the ties.
Oh, here he goes. It just doesn't stop.
Drew Diener.
I used to not like country club kids.
Yeah, well, you're talking.
Because they were rich.
Well, I was never a member. I always worked at country club.
Bob Valvano, please do that for me. Open the door and just take one step in and scream at the top of your lungs, ESPN Louisville! I will pay for your lunch if you do that. The first person who can get that on video. I'm sick of this spit. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm channeling my inner Scott Reynolds.
I didn't see the video.
I didn't see it either. Yeah. I shouldn't say entertaining because it's actually a very serious thing.
Yeah, but his reaction was quality, great.
Quality I'm happy we have three working mics. I am the most excited about this. I mean, we didn't think Billy could use this mic this morning. So if we get nothing out of the roundtable,
we know
have three
that we
working
now have
mics.
Working equipment.
Yes, it's fantastic.
That's and I'm on the mic that Billy was on. So great. What diseases do
he
I have?
He hasn't coughed in 2 weeks. Whoa. He hasn't coughed in 2 weeks.
Yowza. He's Drew. He's Locke. I'm Bob. Let's get right to it, shall we? I made a semi, I guess, snarky remark, but people who could not name a tennis player if their lives depended on it in Rex's entire 3-decade tenure here now are making it sound as if this is the most important topic in the world to them, Louisville tennis. But there is meat on the bone in this regard. It does bring into question coaches' conduct and how it's changed from the 60s, 80s, aughts to now. And so that's the question to you all. What is the most significant part of this storyline that you take away? Is it that?
The most significant thing that I take away is that coaching today, I don't think anything on a team anymore is sacred. I don't think conversations in the van, in the locker room. I think what you could say and maybe get away with 5 years ago you can't today, and that the power, I think for too long probably players had no, their opinion didn't matter. And I mean, now I think all of that is, I'd be wary of anything I said in any setting if I were a coach, because context doesn't show up in a written report. I'll say that.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, and I'll agree with Drew, and then also say, to me, the biggest change going forward is you just can't – the idea of playing through pain and people's pain threshold and pain tolerances and everything else, there was a time when a coach's role was to maybe push you beyond what you were comfortable doing, and I'm sure you've talked about this, Bob. And I don't know that coaches are going to have the latitude to do that anymore if every person that gets pushed can come back and say, well, I didn't feel right, and he still made me play, and that has a limiting effect. And maybe it should. Like, that's the thing. Every time I spent my whole show, I'm sure Drew did the same. Like, you start to have this strong take, and gosh darn it, they better not. And then you go, wait a minute. Then every single time a player says, well, I'm hurt and he didn't want to play, and I didn't want to play and he made me play, then you're taking all power away from coaches to actually impact change. So it's not easy going forward. I just do know the options of the ways you can coach, the ways you can motivate, and the techniques you can use continue to get taken away, and that's probably appropriate. But even Drew and Billy were talking about earlier, in 20 years, I don't know what coaches are going to be able to do other than saying, good job, Billy, or keeping their mouths shut.
Let me offer this up for discussion, because this is what I think is really, here's where I look for the answer. I look to the professionals, and what it's come down to is you look at the professional level, everything is done by consensus now. There's no one guy by design who, unless Bill Belichick maybe, who really is going to, everything, pitch count, substitution patterns, minutes played, combinations, who you sign. So I would suggest, to your point, I would think that, like, if I were coaching again, the preseason conditioning program, I would tell the trainer and the doctor, nobody plays unless you tell me they're okay. No questions asked from me. But to your point, Locke, a guy might still say, well, I know I can play, but I'm on my limit right now. I can't go anymore. I would have a strength and conditioning coach, which is why they all have them, who say, look, is this a healthy regimen to get guys in top physical shape? And if it is, then I'm going to ask you to adhere to it. And
yeah, but there's no universal standard. So someone would argue what's healthy for player A isn't for player B. Like all the stories about Rick and even Cal, they play, you throw up because that's, you know, you work out till you throw up. I mean, yeah. You get to the
legendary
point,
stories,
that's
right?
Not, yeah. That's not safe. That could be considered mistreatment.
Well, then maybe it should change.
Yeah, I mean,
because I don't, because the question I've always wondered is, do you have to do all that stuff?
Right.
I mean, it's one of those that for years we've allowed coaches the latitude, like brilliant artists. Well, we have to let them do that because that's the only way they can win. Is that the only way they can win? Like, I don't know. Does Brad Stevens run his players till they throw up? Does Pop do all those guys? I mean, so evidently you can win without, did Steve Kerr? I don't know, and you've always got great players, but you're begging the question. You're not addressing what I'm really asking you, which is, are those things necessary? Is this a come-to-Jesus time for sports to start reevaluating how we do things?
I mean, maybe so, but I also think of all the players that have called in the last few days in my show, and people have reached out to me individually. I don't think Rex Karma started changing how much he pushes players for injury in the last 2 years. All of a sudden, after 27 years, he's going to make a philosophical change in year 28, 29. That, you know, people are going to get cortisone shots and things that I never associate with college tennis and things. In you know, I mean, it's just not part of it. Tennis and those sports, if you're 80%, you're almost worthless at that level. I think, and if it's an injury that is, you know, maybe you get away with a little tendonitis, maybe, but you have like a foot in there. Yeah, I mean, you're done. You can't move. You know, if you can't move well enough, you're not going to play. And I've never heard it. I mean, we had somebody call this morning who had played as recently as 2 years ago. He referred to himself being injured so many times he should have been mummified, that he said, I never felt pressured to play. So I don't know what's
so
really.
Why do you
I can't
think
imagine he makes
about?
This change.
Then why did this come about? That's the question I would ask.
I'd say a disconnect with it. And look, he recruited all these players. So it's not like, you know, you can say he inherited someone else's
guys,
players.
Right.
So it was a mix of players and maybe a staff. A trainer on this didn't feel like he could speak up on the matter. I don't know.
He traditionally had a really international roster, too.
All tennis rosters.
So I don't know how much that plays into it as well. But it does seem weird that there was this 25-plus-year career, and you haven't heard this stuff. maybe it's guys feel more emboldened now. And,
maybe
but,
so.
But you've heard a bunch of testimonials. I will say, just Bob, nothing that happens in college tennis is going to be a come to Jesus moment because it's college tennis.
But
the bigger picture
is
well
taken.
If
that's not what we're talking about here, no disrespect to Rex, it's the freaking tennis program. It's not even a pimple on an elephant's you-know-what. Why are we even talking about it? So for it to have substance has got to be in a broader context.
Sure, agreed.
You saw it with the North Carolina women's program, right? A Hall of Fame coach, players complained, and she went the wayside. I mean, I think we are reaching maybe an athlete's revolution time or something like that here.
On that front,
know, to where they can speak up and maybe – I don't know, maybe universities are so fearful of lawsuits and they know that things might be, maybe have gone on in the past that shouldn't have. I don't know. I had a friend of mine yesterday who works in college coaching say, no one's getting tenured anymore. You watch, why a guy like Buzz Williams makes a lateral move. He's getting out of town before he gets forced out of town. And that,
he's getting forced out of Virginia Tech?
Well, no, I'm saying he left Marquette, right?
Oh, Marquette.
That was a lateral move to Virginia Tech, I think by most accounts, for most people. And people... you'll see people make lateral moves because you wear out your welcome at a place, and if you're there long enough, you hang around long enough to be a villain.
You said something that's very telling, though. People who don't know, that to me is the biggest problem, is the people in positions of making decisions really don't know. I don't know who these people are. No disrespect to Rhonda Bishop, who's the vice president. You think she's ever going to watch a tennis practice?
But her job is to manage risk. See, the first thing in that that's the first word that means the most crucial.
Yeah, that's true. Vice President, that's a valid point. But let me go back to your other valid point. The people who make these decisions have not been on the – it's not a matter of, unless you're coaching, you can't know.
Thought you were going down that road, and Mount Locke was getting ready to run.
It doesn't even have to be that. Yeah. It just has to be, you've got to be in there. You've got to go see. If you're the athletic director, Locke, or the assistant athletic director, you got to go watch. You got to try to take a trip with the team. You got to go see them. Because if a guy has one thing that's out of character, you can say, if somebody brought that to you, listen, we've all had bad days. That wasn't him at his best, but I've watched him. That's not who he is. But if you don't know... you always assume the worst. And if you're in charge of risk management, that is what goes through your head. Well, geez, maybe this stuff is running rampant. We can't put ourselves there, so we got to make a change. And that's the problem. And a lot of it is because everybody steps aside and lets coaches do their thing because that's so alien to what these people do for a living that they let the coaches, that's just coaching. That's doing what he does. And I think it's by design, though. I don't think they want to give hard, concrete guidelines because then they can't fire you. If you meet all these guidelines, they like to know that they can get rid of you on a whim. I really believe
that. But they didn't get on a whim. You got to remember, they're paying him. I mean, they fired him without cause, all of this.
That's not, we're talking about two different things. Yeah. I'm not talking about this specifically. I'm speaking about in general. Yeah. They don't do that because this way, if you win and you graduate players, your style's boring. We don't have enough people in the stands. If you win and there's people in the stands, but your kids aren't graduating, out you go. If you win and your kids graduate and there's people in the stands, but one of your players went and robbed the bank, that's on you. Out you go. So I think there's something to that. And I think that because it's so highly visible, it's easy to hide behind any. I mean, I said this. Do you think there's anybody listening if they worked? How long was Rex here?
29 years.
Let's have somebody listening who worked at their job 29 years. Let's say I took their 10 worst days on the job and put them together. Could I weave that into a tapestry that makes them look either inept, dishonest, or something else? I would bet the mortgage I could. Anybody. You.
Unless it was Paul Rogers, your broadcast thought it. I just saw the article on him. Like, I think his 10 worst days, he's probably still a really nice guy.
Maybe five.
Outside of him, he's the exception to proves the rule.
Worst days.
Yeah.
Well, the day that we went off the day we went off the air at the Garden and he was screaming at me wasn't his most quiet moment. But I think that's what this comes down to. And but the one thing, can we all agree some things we're confident of? It has nothing to do with a Vince Tyree purge.
Yeah, the Jurich terrorist trying to weaponize it, I've had enough of.
Isn't that ridiculous?
Bill Olson hired him.
I quoted you on that. Yeah. I didn't even realize that. Yeah. This isn't even the Jurich's guy.
Yeah, this has nothing to do with that. But anything that can be weaponized for them, the extremists will do it.
I can't believe I'm going to do this because I'm not going to subject myself. And Nick knows I can't ignore the text line.
Uh-oh.
But with 4 minutes to go, it's really bad because you guys are going to want to answer this.
There we go.
Tom did a lot of good things. But if you took 90% of the athletic directors in the country and put them in a chair and said, do whatever the hell you want, nobody's going to say no to you for anything. I think a lot of them would have got a lot of things done here. And we all say, He got him in the ACC. Name me the AD who got Pitt in the ACC. Is he his massive celebrity? Could you name the guy? Couldn't even name the guy.
No.
Who's the AD who got Syracuse in the ACC? Who's that genius?
I think they would have a significant head start over Louisville. I mean, Syracuse as a university, as being a part of the Big East and being part of significant—
Louisville's in the Big East.
But having legendary players like Jim Brown and Ernie Davis and people like that, I mean, I think their history is far greater than Louisville's.
All I know is that I don't hear the people celebrating the AD that was a— He gave a tennis coach a 7-year contract. When I heard that, I almost blanked my pants. I've never heard that in the 20-some-odd years I've been in college athletics. The contracts that they're trying to dig out of from Bobby Petrino when he was bidding against himself, which we now know. I mean, the sulky, pouty Yum Center thing, which to me was really the start when I started to say, that's not being a leader. I'm sorry.
That was embarrassing. No, that was embarrassing.
I mean, I don't fault him for negotiating the best deal he could do, but once you sit down and the books are open, they open the books and said, look, we got troubles. We're all partners here. We all got to kick in. And he goes and stands in the corner and folds his arms and sits there during a press conference like a sulky 12-year-old. I mean, I'm sorry. It's time to start saying there were a lot of warts as well as a lot of achievements. And like I said, now the texts will come in and scream at me. I'll be
put it down. Who cares? They have to say.
But I mean, well,
Drew doesn't even check them.
What do you
think? I get it filtered.
No. I mean, look, we're all basically on the same page. You cannot deny. First off, this has nothing to do with George. And if you try and make it about George, then you've exposed yourself as kind of clueless from the start. And we are going to dismiss you out of hand because
right.
It has nothing to do with George
or Vince.
And that's the other thing. However you feel about this decision, and there is some nuance to it. There's it's not cut and dried. He had to go. It's not cut and dried. He had to stay. You can really take a position in the middle. But that's not kissing U of L's behind or Vince's behind or being on. It's just people want to make it about things that it's not. So that's point one. But as far as the Jurich big picture issue, you cannot dispute or deny what he did for the university. And you cannot dispute and deny that he created a culture where they occasionally the rules didn't seem to matter as much. It was a culture of I don't want to use the word selfishness but it was U of L above all and everyone else be damned. And I think that created some of the atmosphere for the positions they found themselves in. And I said, just to bring back to Rex. Rex, in some sense, is a victim of that because U of L is known as Scandal U, and they didn't want another scandal with players accusing mistreatment. And they just said it's better to just move on from Rex than deal with all of that. So, Jurich, his firing was mishandled. They didn't have cause to fire him. He did wonderful things. They should put a statue somewhere of him on the campus, and that's fine.
They should have done to him what Louisville did to Rex, frankly, replace him and pay him.
And yes, so we don't like the culture he's creating. Here's your money. Thank you very much. Now, they're not even telling Rex thank you very much, but either way, but the idea that he was perfect or that he did what no one else could do or that he's single-handedly responsible. As much as Jim Ramsey had issue upon issue upon issue, don't sleep on the fact that Louisville had to convince these other ACC schools to let a school into their midst who wasn't remotely in their league academically. Not even close. And Ramsey was the one that sold the school presidents on that trajectory. Had nothing to do with Jurich. So, and Charlie Strong, without him, they don't get in the ACC with him rebuilding the football program. So there's plenty of praise to be given to Jurich. My only take is he's gotten plenty of praise. Like, there has been no
shortage of that.
Tom Jurich has been praised enough. And then if you occasionally say, you know what? It wasn't all sunshine and rainbows. People freak out. And that's you do you. I'm not going to worry about that.
Yeah, he passed UConn at the wire. I'm not saying everybody could have done that. UConn seemed to have that inside track for that last spot in the ACC. Things had to go on the way. I'm not going to. I don't know how we got it back, making it about Jurich when we said we weren't going to make it about Jurich. But, I mean, I will say that that's something that I don't know that anyone could have done because it seemed like UConn was the favorite and he clipped them at the wire and they're sitting in wasteland in UConn. I mean, they are basically getting rid of football. I mean, they are an entirely different athletic pro. The world changed, and they were the ones without the chair when the music
them
stopped.
Them and Cincinnati both got the –
But I think worse at UConn, I mean, they're basically giving up on football.
Yeah, but even when they weren't giving up on football, they how much money they had? They one big year they almost bankrupted them because they couldn't afford to go to the stupid bowl game. I mean, that's when you start realizing how much of a fallacy there is in a lot of the monetary breakdown of big-time college sports.
Somebody really wants to get in touch with you.
They do.
Yeah, your phone's been blowing up. Yeah, it's been blowing up. You haven't heard it. Drew and I have been like, nothing is off the chain.
I thought it was yours. I would have picked up. You know, the joke is that somebody I owe money to. I really is somebody I owe money to. Last thing, this question, because one of you brought up, I think Locke did, and I just wanted to get your parting comment on this. Why didn't they just say, okay, I have my take on why, but I want to see what you think. Somebody said, well, if they were just going to pay him, why didn't they just say, hey, we decided to go in a new direction and keep all this in-house? And I have some thoughts as to why. Why do you think they did it the way they did?
Well, I think they started an investigation. I was told that Breck's new investigation was coming towards the end of the season. Somebody that would know told me that a little bit earlier today, and that he thought it might end this way. But they had to go through this process, and I think obviously I didn't fire him for cause, so I think they didn't want to go through trying to do that. But I also think they took a look at this and said maybe we should fire him, maybe we shouldn't. But those players aren't going to play for that coach, and that coaching staff it can't get along. It's a toxic environment. That this won't work next year this way. And if we have the money to pay it, may as well go ahead and do that and move along, because this season would have worked. I don't know why. I don't know why it took 100 days or however many days it did to get that far. And as classes are starting back, you have to do it. Maybe it just takes that long to do an investigation. That part I don't know, but I think that's what they ultimately just decided, that hey, if this isn't going to work this year, you know, whether right or wrong about it, and we have the money, let's do it.
My thing, and I'm curious to hear your analysis, yeah. Bob, as to why they wouldn't. Say they do the investigation, they find that they don't like the culture, and everything that they've said could be absolutely true. Like, we didn't have enough to fire, we just don't like the culture, we'd like to move on. Why wouldn't you just pull him in and say, look, it's not a good look for you if this goes public. We're going to buy you out and just say new direction. You don't complain, we don't bring up details, nobody makes an open records request, and we just move on. And what I don't understand, the only part that I don't get, is they get the results in the investigation, and then it became combative. And maybe they did that with Rex and he still was like, no, I'm determined to fight for my good name, and that's possible. But I feel like there was a way, and I'm never one for covering things up. Shine the light of transparency. But if you're Louisville, this has become, despite your best efforts, another scandal. Like, you didn't want it to be. You're paying him off, so it's not a scandal. And guess what? It's like Louisville has a coach who mistreated players, and this is going to get added to the litany. The next time something happens with Louisville, UK fans are going to go, and they had that tennis coach that was abusing players. Whether that's true or not, it's now added to the tally. And I would think that would be something you would want to avoid if you're Louisville, and Rex would want to avoid this stain on him, because obviously he thinks it's unfair. So my biggest surprise is they couldn't come to some kind of quieter resolution.
I think there's
deal.
Three things, real quick. All right, do an ID, and then I'll give my, because you asked, and I'll tell you. Go ahead.
You're listening to Kentuckiana's ESPN 680, WHBE Newburgh, and 105.7 WHBE FM Eminence Frankfurt.
Here's the comment. Three things. One, if you're Rex, because as I said, I don't want to make this about me, but I went through enough similar situation at Catholic U that I can relate to this. You're all these things are going through your head, and they wanted to do the same thing, hush it up and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't want it to, because I thought that it's going to get out anyway, because the kids who were pissed off are going to talk. And you want to know the truth? Some of them are going to take it as a badge of honor. I got that guy fired. In fact, the kid who was the catalyst behind what I went through at Catholic, the first time I got wind anything was going on is they asked the kid, what are you going to do next year? One of the kids on the team who liked me said, what are you going to do? He said, I'm going to play for the new coach. And the kid came to see me and said, you leaving? I said, no, I'm not planning to leave. I love it here. He said, well, I'm going to just talk to so-and-so. And he told me, and that's the first time I got wind of it. And then I pursued it. And they said, oh, yeah, there's an investigation going on. So if you're Rex, you're probably saying to yourself, this is bullspit. I'm not just going to sit here, because people will assume the worst, number one. That was the second thing. If you don't tell them, they assume the worst. I hate to say this, if you're Catholic.
Which is why he was on a social media campaign the whole summer.
Yeah, exactly. Because I was at Catholic U, and I'm sorry, I'm just telling you the truth. You're a scandal at a Catholic institution. There's some really, really heinous things that go through people's minds. And I was like, no, there's a little difference between maybe making an inappropriate statement or something and some of the things that it's associated with. So that didn't help me. So that's the first thing. The second thing is, I think Louisville said, we are committed to transparency now. And if we're going to be committed to transparency, you can't be a little pregnant. You're either going to be transparent or you're not. And so this happened. This is what we're doing. This is the best way we can handle it. And I give him credit for that. It takes balls to do that, to stand up and say, this is what we're doing. This is why we think this is the right thing to do. We know not everybody's going to agree, but that's why we're going forward. So I think that's the second and maybe most meaningful part of it. And the third part is, even if you want to be cynical, if Louisville doesn't do that, they're going to assume worse things for him.
That day, the school's the assumption point,
they're going to
yeah.
say, my God, what must have this guy been doing? I mean, they kept people on the staff who were, you know, having affairs. For this, the tennis coach to get fired, he must have killed somebody. So you say, because you want to know the truth? I read this, all the stuff that you circled here and said that in the allegations. They determined that these are the things that he did. And I read them, that took recruiting trips around where his kids played.
His kid was an elite level junior. That's like saying he went to the McDonald's All-American game.
That's what I'm saying.
That part, well, that's why that one in the end was like totally knocked down.
So what I'm saying is, right. You know what? Yeah. I read these and I said, yeah, he probably did that. Yeah, he probably did that. Yep. He probably did that. I would guess he did that. He probably regrets doing that. And you know what? He's a good guy. That's how I see it. Because I coached. But I also understand if you're the school, you say, okay, we'll pay him and move on. But that's why I hope that he can. The question is, does he really have a legal leg to stand on? And if they're going to pay him, I'm sorry to tell him, I don't think he does.
Nope. Not a lawyer. Don't know.
I mean, well, no, you can't sue for your reputation, can you? I guess
you can.
You
can. The only way you could is if you applied for a job,
right.
And by all accounts, experts would say you should have got that job, and somebody at that school says, no, we couldn't hire him because of the baggage, then you could say, but to the best of my knowledge, he hasn't tried to get another job. And I hope he can.
It's been a week. Wants
yeah.
It's
well, but long. I mean, even if he knew he was getting investigated in the spring, maybe he sent some feelers out or something. I hope, you know, if that's the case, I hope he can get back on his feet, because I'm telling you, he's in a terrible way right now. I'm sure he's absolutely heartbroken. I feel for him. But it's amazing. We have now done more University of Louisville tennis talk.
I know.
In the history,
I can tell
of this
you, he was 20th. Always supportive of me when I was running suicides back in 1990 at Blairwood, and I was out there. You know, at least I felt like I was encouraged by him, and he wasn't telling me to, you know, run harder.
No, he got a bad crop. It's like a farmer with a bad crop this year. But I wish him well. But that was a good conversation. You guys got to go. Thanks for staying extra. We'll take a break. More to come here. It's the V Show, ESPN 680-1057. It is amazing.
This is it. The final days of Genesis Diamond's GIA Diamond Extravaganza. Response has been amazing as savvy shoppers take advantage of this incredible value. It's truly a game-changing offer. Now through Sunday, all GIA certified diamonds at Genesis are 20% off. That's 20% below Genesis' already unbeatable price. Listen, this never happens. These discounts are rarely, if ever, offered to the general public. A 20% savings on GIA certified diamonds is truly unheard of. In fact, don't be surprised to see other jewelry store owners and even diamond wholesalers shopping alongside you at this event. All diamond shapes are included. Rounds, ovals, princess cuts, cushion cuts, pear shapes, even fancy yellow diamonds. From a half carat to 10 carats. From $1,500 to $500,000. Don't miss this chance. Get Genesis' already best price minus an extra 20% on all GIA certified diamonds. But remember, this special offer ends at 5 p.m. this Sunday and will not be extended. Hurry for the best selection. Only at Genesis Diamonds. Shelbyville Road Plaza.
Like your phone, but not your service? With Spectrum Mobile, you can keep your current phone and upgrade your network. Simply pick the data plan that's right for you. Pay for the data you use, or choose unlimited for just $45 a month per line. All in. And talk and text are always free. Switching is easy. Go to spectrum.com/BYOD to learn more or to find a store near you. Spectrum Internet required. Restrictions apply.
Bright Spring presents the 2019 UPS Plane Pole, Pulling for a Purpose, benefiting Special Olympics Kentucky. You're invited to join a team to compete pulling a Boeing 757 or be a spectator on September 21st at UPS Worldport. Enjoy food, music, giveaways, and stop by the College and Career Fair to learn about UPS's opportunities where future you graduates debt-free. For more information, text JOIN THE TEAM to 33588 or to apply now, visit upsjobs.com. That's upsjobs.com.
When it comes to racing, you can't win if you don't show. It's a summer of prizes and winning at Ellis Park with the $10,000 Dash for Cash on Fridays. Great outdoor prizes every Saturday and Family Day Sundays with TV and Xbox giveaways, dollar hot dogs, and $2 drafts. Join us August 23rd for Twilight Racing and live music by Tailgate Revival and our August 24th Umbrella giveaway. For complete details, visit ellisparkracing.com or race on over to Ellis Park, your fast track to winning.
Window World has you covered when it comes to vinyl siding. Offering a variety of colors, styles, and textures, Window World has quality options designed for you. Call now for a free estimate and have our professional installers update the look of your home. We're America's largest exterior remodeler for a reason. Our exceptional siding provides protection, energy efficiency, and beauty for a lifetime. Siding from Window World. Simply the best for less.
You may have been born to be wild, but you weren't born to be dead from a needless motorcycle crash. So when you're even just a little impaired, you do not get your motor running. You do not head out on the highway. What you do is plan a ride home. Because you may be looking for adventure, but you're not looking for trouble. This Labor Day weekend, please ride sober. Paid with funds through the Kentucky Office of Highway Safety.
At home or far from home, heroes feed their hunger with the extra-large two-topping superhero pizza. 10 massive slices and two toppings of your choice. Delivered in a special Spider-Man Far From Home collectible box. All for the blockbuster price of just $12. It's a deal of epic proportions and is only available at Papa John's. See Spider-Man Far From Home in theaters July 2nd. Better ingredients, better pizza, Papa John's. Rated PG-13 at participating U.S. stores. Taxes and delivery fee extra.
The Four Roses Bourbon Rock the Water Tower, September 1st at the Louisville Water Tower Park, featuring the Four Roses Bourbon Tasting Experience and amazing food. Live music by Tony and the Tan Lines and the Crashers with special guest John Elefante, former lead singer of Kansas, and Johnny Edwards, former lead singer of Foreigner, and much more. Classic rock, classic fun, Labor Day weekend at the Four Roses Bourbon Rock the Water Tower. Tickets available online now at rockthewatertower.com.
UPS is currently hiring package handlers for its preload operation. Earn $13 an hour and receive up to $250 in weekly attendance bonuses while working up to a career as a package car driver. In as little as 6 months, you could have an opportunity to connect with customers and build lasting relationships in the community. Future you looks good in brown. Apply now at upsjobs.com or text brown to 33588. That's brown to 33588.
Bluegrass Karting and Events now has the fastest go-karts in Kentucky and axe throwing. Grab your coworkers, family, and friends and make a night of it with our new full bar and food menu. Bluegrass Karting and Events is Louisville's premier high-speed entertainment destination. Online at bluegrasskarting.com.